Ann Moldea, based in Washington, D.C., where the winds are sweeping the nation's capital on the nomination of Brett Kavanaugh. He's the talk of the town, actually exceeding any discussion about the possible removal of Rod Rosenstein as the deputy attorney general. But Dan Moldea, and we'll hear from him in just a moment, actually had a meeting with one Brett Kavanaugh 20 years ago, a little over 20 years ago, in early 1998, when Kavanaugh, at the age of 33, was leading the charge against Bill Clinton in the Ken Starr investigation. He was the top aide to Ken Starr in that investigation, which resulted in the impeachment of the 42nd American president. No conviction, but as we've discussed on this show, Kavanaugh wanted Ken Starr to ask the most personal of personal questions about what happened in the Oval Office between Ms. Lewinsky and the President of the United States. And now, of course, people are asking very personal questions and making extremely personal allegations about Brett Kavanaugh. Before we get there, Dan Moldea, always a pleasure to talk with you.
Jim, pleasure talking to you. It's very mean here right in Washington right now. It's rainy and mean.
Mean. It's been mean for a little while, hasn't it?
It's sort of taken the hearings sort of have sort of created the atmosphere for Civil War-like behavior, I think. I don't know. It's pretty scary right now out here. It's there's a lot of hatred, like, everywhere, and I don't know how we turn around from this. It's going to be daunting to try to put things right again.
Well, Kavanaugh is expected to testify Thursday before the Judiciary Committee. And right now, so is one of his accusers, the principal one, Professor Christine Blasey Ford, who alleges that Judge Kavanaugh, when he was 17 and when she was 15, tried to rape her with another man in the room, Mark Judge, who has not been called to testify to the Judiciary Committee. Dan, do you think Kavanaugh can survive this?
I just don't know how to quantify what's happening right now. It's like if I were a woman and something like this had happened, I guess I would want to fight back, and I'd want to vindicate myself. On the other hand, another vindication would be, for Kavanaugh himself. I mean, if I were falsely accused of something, I don't care whether it's a man or a woman making the false accusation, I'm going to be fighting back. I'm going to be fighting back hard. So if Kavanaugh is telling the truth, I fully expect him to fight back hard. I don't know how he can relent on this. He has no choice but to move forward and try to redeem his reputation. If he's lying, that's something else. I mean, he's not just going for the Supreme Court. He's got a job on the second most powerful court in the United States, the U.S. Court of Appeals for the D.C. Circuit. That is the second most powerful court in the land, and if he's lying about all of this stuff, he's in jeopardy of losing that job as well.
Well, and people go to jail for lying to the FBI. So far, there is no investigation from the FBI in this case, as there was in the Anita Hill case 27 years ago. But Brett Kavanaugh has not one, but one another accuser, and perhaps more coming if Michael Avenatti is on the level. He says a third woman is about to come forward. Today, the New York Times even has a story about his high school yearbook in 1983. It is interesting that the previous Supreme Court nominee who was confirmed, Neil Gorsuch, he went to the same high school, and there were no allegations that he was involved in heavy drinking or any kind of sexual misconduct at Georgetown Prep. And yet, if you read these stories about Kavanaugh and his buddies, they were quite a crew back in their day.
I'm sure they're not unique. It's just, you know, most people who are in positions like this, have found ways to get through it. Like I said, if he has been falsely accused, his job is to fight back like a wildcat, regardless of whether his accuser is a man or a woman. He fights back. If he's lying, he is stunned. He is finished across the board. I just have no idea how to quantify. My situation was much different. I was writing a book about Vince Foster, as you know, and about the suicide of Vince Foster, and indeed it was a suicide. And I was finishing up my book, I needed some information from the Office of the Independent Counsel, Ken Starr's operation, because I heard that they were coming out with a report about Foster's death, and the way the timing was, it was going to come out before my book actually was released, and I didn't want my book to be cold coffee. So Starr had two top deputies, Hickman Ewing and Jackie Bennett. I went to Hickman Ewing, and he said, listen, we'll give you non-public information on an off-the-record basis if we know where you're coming from and Ken Starr personally approves of you. And there's a guy in our office named Brett Kavanaugh who's very smart, and he's the guy we sort of assigned to talk to people like you to give you this non-public information on an off-the-record basis. And I had tape recorded that conversation. And then for one reason or another, Ewing didn't follow up. And I thought maybe Starr had put the kibosh on me because Starr and I had a run-in in a legal matter several years earlier. So I went to the other deputy, Jackie Bennett, and I said to him, you know, basically, can I patch things up with Starr? I need to get some information about my book to make sure I'm not cold coffee when it's released. And he said, well, listen, if you need substantive information, Starr's very busy, but there's somebody else I can point you to for substantive information. Why don't I arrange for him to call you? And I tape recorded that conversation as well. He never mentioned Brett Kavanaugh, but 4 days later I got a call from Brett Kavanaugh saying, you know, Jackie Bennett told me to call you, and, you know, what can I do to help you? And I said, well, I'm just trying to make sure that my book is timely and fair and accurate. I'm not looking for grand jury information, Jim. I'm not. And nobody, just to be clear, no one ever said to me, hey, Dan, let me give you some grand jury information. Mm-hmm. It doesn't work that way. So Kavanaugh and I met for lunch on January 19th, 1998, just hours before the Lewinsky scandal broke. I had no clue that this was about to happen. And during our conversation, my conversations with Ewing and Bennett were on the record, the ones that I taped. My conversation with Brett Kavanaugh, which I did not tape, was off the record. And in 20 years, I have not revealed the contents of that off-the-record conversation. And then when the leaks situation became an issue during the Clinton impeachment drama, I filed an affidavit with the court on August 24th, 1998, which is available on my website, Moldea.com. Just go there and just click it, and you'll see the affidavit I did in 1998, as well as an updated one I did in 2018, which referred to everything that's going on right now, where I went to a friend of mine who teaches ethics at the College of Journalism at the University of Maryland. I said, listen, I had an on-the-record conversation with Hickman Ewing where he referred to Brett Kavanaugh, but in my first affidavit, because I had an off-the-record conversation with him, I identified him as, quote, OIC number two. Can I now, 20 years later, now reveal that it was Brett Kavanaugh that he was discussing? And he said, if Hickman Ewing had a conversation with you on the record, then anything he said is on the record and you can reveal it. So I went back, retyped it, and again, that's available on my website, Moldea.com, as well. And that's kind of what started my thing. But now what I've got, I mean, I have good stuff about, you know, how the leaks were coming out of the OIC and how the Starr operation was a smear campaign against the Clintons. That I have pretty good, pretty nailed, but I can't even compete with Bob Woodward's book, which came out in the revelations, and that anonymous in the op-ed page, the horrible hurricane that took lives and everything else. How do I compete with news like this? Not to mention all these new 11th hour charges against the nominee by this woman in California, this very distinguished, accomplished woman in California, as well as now Michael Avenatti, who just blew my mind on Rachel Maddow's show last night with what he's claiming.
Yeah.
So, well, you, a messy situation.
Mm-hmm. You met Kavanaugh at the same time that he was being groomed for big things in the Republican ranks, according to the former GOP operative David Brock. He writes, 20 years ago, when I was a conservative movement stalwart, I got to know Brett Kavanaugh. He makes an appearance in my memoir, Blinded by the Right. I describe him at a party full of zealous young conservatives gathered to watch Bill Clinton's 1998 State of the Union address, weeks after the story of his affair with a White House intern had broken. When the TV camera panned to Hillary Clinton, I saw Brett, at the time a key lieutenant of Ken Starr, the independent counsel investigating various Clinton scandals, mouth the word, bitch. But there's a lot more to know about Kavanaugh than just his Pavlovian response to Hillary's image, writes Brock. Brett and I were part of a close circle of cold, cynical, and ambitious hard-right operatives being groomed by GOP elders for much bigger roles. We'll talk more about this and go to the phones with Dan Moldea after this time out on Talk Louisiana. This is Jim Inkster. Thank you for joining us for Talk Louisiana. Matt Doyle is producing, and another segment with the celebrated investigative reporter Dan Moldea. 877-217-5757. We go to Phil in Jefferson Terrace. Phil, good morning.
Good morning, gentlemen. Good morning, Mr. Moldea. I got to say, I mean, these people have gone after Valerie Plame. They've gone after Anita Hill. They went after anyone who stands in the way of the power that they're wielding. And then there's no conscience or morals at all of lying about going to Iraq. I mean, it's basically a completely corrupt power structure that we're living under right now.
What do you think, Dan Moldea?
Well, you know, there's a lot of bad things going on right now. And I don't know if I'd make that equivalence in all of this, but I look at what's happening. Again, it's no secret that I believe that Trump is dishonest and corrupt and mobbed up and a Russian stooge. And this has to be addressed. And I think that, as Jim opened the show up saying about Rod Rosenstein as basically being, you know, it seems as though this is almost a distraction away from Kavanaugh right now, but what's happening right now with Rod Rosenstein and the possibility that there is an opening now for Bob Mueller's investigation to end. That's very daunting right now. It's very scary. It's going to be interesting to see about the meeting. I mean, you know, while Kavanaugh's testifying on Thursday with this very distinguished woman, his accuser, there's going to be a meeting with Rod Rosenstein and Trump, apparently at the White House, which is going to be something to watch as well. The guy I think to watch is this new head of the criminal division. I forget his name, Ben, and he has an Eastern European last name. He was recently nominated by Trump and confirmed by the Senate to be head of the criminal division. That's the guy to watch. He had connections in his previous life with the Alpha Bank of Russia. And that's the guy I'm watching to see how he is maneuvered if Rosenstein is removed. And again, the opening is there for Rosenstein to be removed. And frankly, when I heard about this conversation that Rosenstein had with the other Justice Department officials, I assumed it was a joke. It was a statement of sarcasm. Hey, what do you want me to do? Go wire to see the president and see if he's nuts so that he will, you know, we can impose the 25th Amendment. I mean, I can't imagine him saying that in real life and in real time and being serious about it. I'm fairly certain it was a joke. And so, you know, we're in a situation where if you make a joke at the wrong time at the wrong place and it's written down, you are in trouble. And this is putting a lot in jeopardy right now, which I'm very concerned about the Mueller, because I think Mueller's report is going to turn all of us into jelly. I think it's going to be breathtaking what this guy has come up with.
All right. We're short on time, and I want to address some other topics with Dan that our listeners have brought up. And we have discussed the finances of Judge Kavanaugh. Up until this year, his job paid $184,500 a year. He got a raise to $211,000, but the man belongs to a country club in which the dues are reportedly over $110,000 a year. He bought $200,000 worth of Washington Nationals tickets. There have been stories that his finances are questionable. What do you make of this, Dan?
The rumor here in Washington was that he was involved in some gambling. He was involved in gambling, sports gambling, or whatever. But in his sworn statement, not just the public statement that was televised before the Senate Judiciary Committee, but in the written questions that followed the hearings, which he answered, he denied ever engaging in sports gambling. Now, if there's a bookmaker out there who ever took a bet that Kavanaugh had placed, that and Kavanaugh lied about that relationship, that bookmaker is going to own a U.S. Supreme Court justice if, in fact, he is confirmed and gets on the court. I mean, he is blackmailable if he's lying about these things. I heard last night he said he was a virgin, that he never had sex in high school, and it was long into college before he ever had sex.
Well, what does that have to do with what's going on here? That has absolutely no relevance to the allegations against him.
I agree. All I'm saying is that if you're looking for whether a person is telling the truth under oath or not, then you're talking about a situation where if he's not telling the truth, whether it's about gambling or it's about sex or it's about his business as a judge or documents he saw or didn't see while he was at the Bush White House, as you pointed out, that he becomes blackmailable to whomever knows the truth about what was going on behind the scenes.
All right, David in Atlanta. David, you're on with Dan Moldea. Hi, David.
Good morning, gentlemen. Mr. Moldea, you're the greatest talk show guest of all time. An honor to have an audience with you, sir. Newsweek magazine has reported that Judge Kavanaugh at Yale University, well, he was a member of a fraternity that was kicked off the campus, and furthermore, there was a club, and this is Newsweek magazine, I hope Jim lets me say this on radio, known for its rowdy behavior, and that's being very kind, referred to or called the Tit and Clit Club.
All right. Well, that's been reported that he was quite a rounder in high school and in college. But that also does not mean he's guilty of what he's being charged. Is that relevant, Dan?
Only if he's lying about it. I think that's the relevancy. I mean, I'm sure there's people out in the listening audience, and all of us, I mean, who went to high school, went to college, I don't know of anyone who's perfect, and we are now being held to standards that go back. And that's kind of amazing. But again, when you take the oath, you have to tell the truth. If you don't tell the truth, then you open yourself up to all kinds of penalties.
Jim on O'Neill Lane. Hi, Jim. You're on with Dan Moldea.
Hi, gentlemen. I have a couple of quick questions. The first one is that do we expect when, say, we've got the current pedophile priest situation going on, do we expect those kids to immediately come forward and provide testimony to police? I don't think we do. I don't know why the teenage girls are suddenly treated differently or thought of differently in that regard. And I'm really curious as to how we would expect anyone to think that Kavanaugh would say anything other than, oh, no, I didn't do it, because it's like, you know, once a date rapist, really, honestly, you kind of keep up with it if you don't get caught the first time.
All right. Your thoughts. Thank you, Jim. Dan Moldea.
What he says is, is true, I think. I mean, the whole priest thing, again, this is so above my pay grade, what we're talking about here. You know, I'm a hard-bitten reporter who investigates organized crime and political corruption and stuff. If this stuff is, I haven't even ever addressed any of this stuff before with regard to this kind of behavior. I mean, again, I'm queasy even discussing this subject because it's so personal and it's so, you know, when we were going after hypocrites during the Clinton campaign, where we were saying people who who have conflicting standards of private behavior for public officials, one for those they like and one for those they don't like. We were talking about, you know, somebody having an affair when pointing their finger at Clinton and because he was having an affair. What's happening now is a lot different from that. I mean, we're talking about, you know, rape, and we're talking about, I mean, we're just into a different world here, and I just don't know how to quantify it. Bottom line is, if you take the oath, you tell the truth. If you don't tell the truth, there are going to be penalties. And in Kavanaugh's case, he has a particularly high bar on this thing.
All right, Dan, we got to roll, but thank you for joining us, as always. And to this point, both Louisiana U.S. Senators Bill Cassidy and John Kennedy apparently remain in the corner of Brett Kavanaugh. We'll see how it goes. He's expected to testify Thursday. And we're back after this timeout with more Talk Louisiana.